You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Thursday, it's the double-headed dream team edition of David Shapiro from Sassman Securities and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Now, gentlemen, follow me closely here because I want to tell you a story. Back in the 1970s on BBC Two in the evening, I think it was every Wednesday evening at 9:30 p.m., there was an historical drama. It was more of a play than a TV series, but anyway, it was on television and it was called I, Claudius. And it concerned the Roman Empire and the lives of four consecutive emperors. The first one was Caesar Augustus, then his son after that, Tiberius, who was a reprehensible fellow. Then came Caligula, and we all know about him. And then following that was Claudius himself. It's based on a book called Claudius the God by a chap called Robert Graves. So there's a bit of fiction in it, but it's mostly factual. Now, what would happen is that there would be the games at the Colosseum, and they would use it as a way to celebrate and to, you know, give some fun to the people. And the Colosseum would be packed. And they couldn't start without the emperor. And the emperor would walk into the Colosseum, and people would see him, and there'd be this massive, massive roar. And he would sit in his chair with a self-satisfied look on his face. And away the games would go. And then obviously, you know, when a Christian was about to be executed by a Roman or something, he'd put either his thumbs up or his thumbs down. But never mind the thumbs up, thumbs down business. The point is that it's exactly like what I witnessed a couple of nights ago on day two of the Republican National Convention. And when I saw the people there, and they all obviously adore Trump, and Trump was sitting there next to his new running partner, Vice President elect J.D. Vance or Vance, and he had this self-satisfied sort of Roman emperor look about him to say that I vanquished all my challengers. And it was really a sickening thing to watch. But what really came across was that everyone's terrified of Trump, not just his political associates who used to hate him. I mean, Vance said some horrible things about him, and Nikki Haley said some horrible things about him, but now they're lauding him and saying how brilliant he is. But also his family. His family stood up there one after the other saying wonderful things about him. They are all terrified of him. And Viv, I have to say, this is a cult. Trump is a cult. What do you think? Did you see any of this stuff?
Well, certainly, I mean, is cult-like in his following. I mean, know that for a while now. And that's also, I think, kind of the weakness he has as well. Because if you look at 538, which is the premier kind of polling kind of company out there, they have kind of fallen back since their founder, Nate Silver, was fired. So, but they're still considered to be one of the premier polling, polling guys out there. They actually still have Trump as the underdog in the election. Hmm. So, because it's not about how many votes you get overall, because this could easily be one of those rare cases in which the Republican gets more votes but loses to the Democrat. Because usually what happens is the Democrat gets more votes and loses to the Republican. This could be the opposite. This could be the Republican getting more votes and losing to the Democrat. Because in the key states that matter, it's all still within margin of error. And there's a significant chance that, you know, Trump doesn't pull it through because, you know, there's some, if you look at the polling of the Democrats, in those things other than Biden, they are significantly ahead of the Republican opponents by like 5 points, 6 points sometimes, even though Trump may be ahead of Biden in those particular states. And the argument is that the bump he's getting right now is obviously the debate. It is the assassination. It is the RNC and whatever. But considering just the fact that the underlying Democrat is looking so strong, we could be seeing that once this kind of stuff goes away, we would see Trump, become again the underdog in those particular states. And so they say it's like a 55 to 45 chance, effectively, that Trump loses and Biden wins. And the second point to point out is this, is that in the last couple of days, there's been leakage by Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, who are basically the leaders in the Congress and the Senate for the Democrats. Yeah. Of where they basically come out and kind of, you know, leaked out that they've gone and talked to Biden and said, you need to quit. Okay. And this is, I think, also very important as well, because you take Biden out of the race with his very high unfavorables and put somebody else in play, that could also change things around. The only issue here is that, you know, the fact of the matter is most people in the country do not know politics. They know Biden because he's been talked about for a while. They know Trump because, of course, Trump is like the most famous person in the world, probably, you know. But they may not know who even like Richard Whitmer or Gavin Newsom is. They might know Kamala Harris, but they're not going to know any of the other guys, like the Shapiro guy, not this Shapiro, but the other Shapiro guy. you know, they may not know these other names. And they obviously would have a huge negative thing. That's why people are talking about as the replacement Michelle Obama. Because Kamala Harris is actually very unpopular. But if you replace Kamala Harris with Michelle Obama, then you have, firstly, someone that's very popular, because obviously she has the rubbed off, like, you know, kind of glamour of the Obama administration. You know, of course, it's the first lady. She was never unpopular. You know, she was like a Hillary Clinton, except for the far right or something. But Hillary Clinton was an unpopular first lady. Michelle Obama was a popular first lady. You know what I mean? Mm. And she also has the name recognition because she's Michelle Obama. And she doesn't have any of the baggage of the normal Democrats because she's never been a politician. So she could almost come in as almost like the genetic Democrat. And you know that whenever you have a thing of this politician versus the genetic opposition usually just wins. So this could be the turnaround. I think it's if Michelle Obama is roped in to be the candidate against Trump, I'm pretty sure she'll be an extremely strong favorite against him.
Okay, this is, so it's not, given us hope, and David is probably sort of holding thumbs, as you say, in South Africa, that this might be the case. Aviv has given us hope, David, that Trump will not be a landslide victor.
That's funny. I was sitting through a presentation as well by one of the analytic companies in the United States, and they had the same one. You know, their political analyst said this is not a shoe-in. Don't you know? It's a research house. They cover everything from politics to economics to individual companies, and their view was very similar to that. Where Viv is probably right. And, where his assessment of Michelle Obama, they have to find someone who's going to stand up against J.D. Vance or Vance. Mm-hmm. He's a very popular, powerful figure, and yes. He made a lot of friends at this convention.
It was a very, very popular speech. Sorry to interrupt you, but he kept on getting interrupted after almost every sentence because people were whooping. Yeah. And he's the future of the Republican Party because he's everything that Trump's not. Young, intelligent. He did so well at Yale, or was it Harvard? Anyway, at business school. Yeah. And he came from nothing, whereas Trump, of course, came from, was just given his money. So, yeah, I would agree with you. He's incredibly popular. Sorry, David, go on.
No. So the problem is that the Democrats need a very powerful person to stand up against this team. The problem with Vance is that he's another Trump. He's just a younger version of it with a lot more energy, a lot more intelligence. His views are extremely right-wing, extremely right. And that's a concern. I think everybody thought that when Trump went, that would be the end. Okay, we'll suffer a few years, but we'll get back to being, who we used to be, Reagan and so on. I'm not going to include Nixon, but I mean, people of that caliber and center of the road, pro-business, whatever it was, conservative light. And this chap's not like that at all. I mean, some of his policies are extreme. One thing that was quite interesting that I'm picking up now, and 70% of, although not a big share of the population, still very influential, is the Jewish vote, Lindsay. And the Jewish vote was 70% Democrat, probably 30% Republican. They had a special session for Israel where there were people speaking on behalf of Israel, waving flags and so on. Mm-hmm. And it's swung the vote to 50-50. So you're getting that. I found that very interesting. Because of
rhetoric that favors Hamas or Palestine from the Democrats?
I'm reflecting how clever they were, where Vance stands and so on. Mm. It's not an area of the population that can swing things, but they can raise a lot of money from it. You've seen that the Democrats are drying up. Their contributions are drying up. You know, it's always been a party which has been supported by, you know, by Jewish business, by the Jewish population.
Mm.
And, another clever view. And that's the easiest thing to swing that. So I'm saying this is, they've played this very, very cleverly. If you want to turn this around, if you're going to turn this around, you've got to be extremely, extremely, smart in who you have. Another thing, Lindsay, the left. I mean, I just got an anger note from my daughter-in-law in Australia, who was reading what they're doing in California. You know, that a teacher cannot report to a parent without the child's permission that they've changed sexual orientation. You know, at school. Oh, in other words, I mean, no,
agenda.
No, I'm saying agenda. You know, in other words.
David, you must use the right words. It's not sexual orientation, which means gay and lesbian.
Gender orientation, apology for that. You know, what I mean is that you're taking on a different gender. And normally parents teacher would go to parents, of a 10, 11, 12-year-old and report these things. You're not allowed to do it without the child's permission. So all I'm getting at is that the left is pushing people, completely in the opposite direction. People are absolutely tired and sick and tired of, those kind of agendas. And that's what concerns me. So the Democrats need something very, very powerful to kind of stop this rolling thunder story.
Yeah. I don't know about Michelle Obama. I think she's great. And I think she was a very dignified first lady and everything. And I think the family and everything, they project what the Democratic Party should be about. But does she have the political acumen? On the other hand, she's got her husband behind her who can advise her and would obviously be a consultant in an informal basis. But anyway, it's fascinating. What is it now? Mid-July. So we've got 3.5 months, mm-hmm. I think. Is it 3.5 months? Yeah. July, August, September, October.
Four and a half months. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very scary. And it's going to have lots of twists and turns. Anyway, I'm sorry I introduced the US political situation, but as a sort of occasional insomniac, I just watched this thing with fascination over two nights in a row. And I tell you what. Now this thing's really, really scares me. The Vance and it's Trump tonight, and I watched that with fascination. About 4 o'clock in the morning.
Before we leave, there's a couple of things to just point out. Firstly, Vance is not like Trump because Vance is a true believer. Because remember where this man came from. This guy was basically raised by his grandmother because his mother was a heroin addict.
Yes.
Okay. And then when he went to like Yale and he went to these like Silicon Valley, he saw what the riches were, and he was just like really angry about the fact that how he grew up and this is what the world looks like and where he came from and the fact that his people were ignored. So he's a true believer. He doesn't, he's unlike Trump, who's populist for probably, would be a Democrat in one thing, would be a Republican in another. This guy is a true believer. But the thing with, I want to point out here is that Vance is also very anti-China. He's far more anti-China than Trump is. Mm. Okay. And, if you look at what he says about Ukraine, he doesn't care about Ukraine. He only cares about Taiwan for as much as it's supposed to think. He wants to have a very, very protectionist policy around the U.S. because he thinks that his people, like the poor white people in the area he comes from, it's called Appalachia. Mm. Apparently, you see Appalachia, not Appalachia. It's the, like the hillbilly kind of guys. Those guys, he thinks, would be better off if America was more protectionist. That means you couldn't produce things out of the country as much and bring it in. You're going to do more stuff internal, and that's going to help his people. And the problem with this is that a couple of things. Firstly, given Trump's age, even though he's looking pretty young and spry at the moment, there's probably at least a one-third chance he is not the president by the end of 4 years from now. Okay? And that means there's a one-third chance this guy, J.D. Vance, becomes president in 4 years' time. And the second thing is that Trump is not a policy person. J.D. Vance is, like you mentioned, extremely smart. He graduated, I think, summa cum laude from Ohio University. He was a, he worked in the, he was a Marine. He's gone to Yale, like you talked about. His wife, by the way, was also very smart. She clerked for Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court Justice. So you're talking about, like, you know, a pretty, like, smart family. And he's more likely to push the policy.
She's Indian.
She's dark skinned. Is she Hispanic or Southeast Asian?
Really Hindi Indian. You know Vivek Ramaswamy, right? The guy that was that Indian guy was also the candidate for the thing. Apparently, he and J.D. Vance are like pretty close friends. They were in the same class at Yale. It's also like he's a vegetarian, and you look at his wedding pictures. Like they had a Hindu wedding and stuff here, so it's pretty, like, you know, out there for the Republicans. But what I'm saying to you is the difference between him and Trump is that whereas Trump may say things, J.D. Vance will make things happen. And I'm expecting that if Trump wins this time around, protectionism is going to go through the roof. You're talking about 10% tariffs for Europe. You're talking about 60% tariffs for China. We are talking about abandoning Ukraine. Ukraine's gone. Forget about that. You're talking about, another thing. I know I'm talking about AI all the time, but I have to mention this, right? The U.S. military has now come out with a statement that is saying that they've had like three major, you know, revamps of the U.S. military, you know, air power, nuclear power, nuclear weapons, and now drones. Like, once you had air power, you had to change how you fought a war. Once you had nuclear weapons, you had to change how you fought a war. You know what I mean? And now that you have drones, you change how you fought a war. And they've come up with a project, and I joke with you not. It's called Project Hellscape.
Okay? What scape?
Hellscape.
Hellscape.
Like, you know, landscape, but hellscape. Okay? Okay. And the plan is, in the future, the way they're going to fight wars is they're going to basically pump tens of thousands of drones into an area and basically kill every living thing that there is there. Because you walk through there, you can have these kamikaze or these attack drones taking you out. Nice. And they say that their plan is if China does invade Taiwan or try to attack Taiwan, they will introduce like countless of these attack drones through the Straits of Taiwan to basically cut off that entire part of the ocean from China. So you couldn't turn anything. No ship could travel through there and whatever. And that is like a pretty like crazy thing, because just look at what the Houthis are able to do with basically nothing in Yemen. There's an attack on oil tanker recently from, I think, Liberia. Okay. And they basically have pretty much stopped, travel through the Red Sea. Can you imagine what the world superpower can do to a piece of ocean if they wanted to with the drones? And that is also a scary thing coming forward.
Well, you know what, Viv? This is interesting because during the Second World War, General Shiro from Japan, he's a Japanese war criminal, he was a microbiologist and various other things. He reinvented an insect population that had a dreadful disease, and it sent it across to China in order to kill the population. Now, today's version of the insect population flying over to China, as far as I read, whether I'm getting this wrong or not, I don't know, but I don't think so. So the same thing is happening now, except it's been modernized to be drones. It's extraordinary. And I've seen the pictures, I've seen the mock-ups of those hundreds and thousands of drones just flying across, and it's quite terrifying, I think. David, you and I will be gone by the time this happens.
Yeah, that's only good news. Yeah. You won't be around.
No, we won't be. What we will be around for, though, is probably the next interest rate cut from the South African Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee. It didn't happen today. David, do you take, as a fund manager, do you take much notice of what the Reserve Bank does with interest rates? Because it seems to me a blunt instrument in this country, and we've spoken about this before. What do you make of it?
I agree. I think I know two people voted in favor of a 25-point cut. The other four against it, so rates are normal. But I think we're now starting to build in that rates will be cut around about September. You know what happened? Our market is so influenced by the large businesses that operate outside of the country that it doesn't really have an impact. It does have an impact on the people in the street, you know, on the general population, but by and large, not much influence. And it might affect the bond market, but I think even watching the bond market's performance over the last month or so as money flowed in on the strength that U.S. rates were coming down, I don't think it's going to have much impact. It might start to have impact on retail sales, but that's going to take some time to filter through. But Lindsay, I mean, if you looked at the retail sales, I mean, the consumer here is basically kaput, dead. I think those numbers are very disappointing. So I look at it. When it comes down by 4 or 5%, I think it'll have an impact. But, you know, it's going to take a long time to get from 8.25% down to levels where it makes a difference. You know, the prime rate here is 11.75. So you've got to bring it down by a good couple of, a couple of percentage points to make a difference. You know, where the prime is at 8% or something like that, then it might have some impact. But it's going to take time.
Yeah, I think, Viv, I spoke to an economist straight after the decision this afternoon, and she works for a really big company, and it wasn't allowed to say, I think it was wrong. I did suggest that maybe it's too conservative, the stance from Lisicha Konyango, and she sort of agreed with it. Do you think that they should be more bold?
No, look, I mean, there's a couple of things in government that I think are exemplary, and I think Lisicha Konyango and the SARB overall has been exemplary. Mm. They have navigated us through times that have been very difficult, in which other countries that we can look at, I mean, like India and like Turkey and so on, have not done as well. You know, there's several countries out there that are not succeeding. I mean, look at Argentina and what's happening in like South America sometimes. We've had a Reserve Bank governor that has been cautious.
Yes.
But the problem is that you can't be aggressive when you're in a place like South Africa. We're just too fragile. You've got to, someone has to be extremely careful about making sure our reputation isn't damaged, making sure that the rand doesn't get these fluctuations that might turn into a spiral like we saw at Turkey. We don't have any kind of like crazy unexpected policies like people see sometimes out of India. So this is something that we've seen, over the last little while. And though, yes, he's been extremely cautious, I would say that the risk and the way he's navigated this little ship of South Africa's economy is the best he could have done otherwise. Now, when it comes to the cutting interest rates, I don't think we can really do it until the U.S. does. I just don't. I think if we do, before the U.S. does, and surprise the market, the rand will weaken significantly, inflation will become an issue again, and we'll have to just raise again. We just can't really start doing this thing. We're going to take our lead from the U.S. And, like David said, we're probably going to be cutting in September in the U.S., and we'll follow thereafter.
I think I agree with Viv. I'm not disagreeing at all. I think your question to me, would it make a difference, on the stock market? And, from that point of view, not really. We're going to need rates coming down dramatically. I agree in the sense that it's in a Reserve Bank and the Treasury are two areas. Our financial markets, our banks are, and it's one area of the market, the financial institutions here, just an area of the market that just keeps us where we are and solid. And, I don't think there are very many other emerging markets that can compete with it.
I think it's quite important to project that image to potential foreign investors, whether it be short-term direct investment or longer term. So it's nice to see that the Reserve Bank is a pillar of strength and stability. So, yeah, it is comforting in a way. Anyway, unless you've got credit card debt, of course. Right, let's have a look at some markets now. Speaking about the South African markets, we'll start with the dollar rand, which is 18.17, barely changed. The British pound against the rand is 23.57. The euro rand is 19.81. Euro dollar is 109.10, which is a euro which has fallen by around about 0.3%. Onto commodities, the gold price. Yeah, I'm doing an interview tomorrow. It's called Trump and Gold, and I'm interested to see what my interviewee is going to say about that. Gold price, it's $11 up today, $2,466 per ounce. Can you remember it? In fact, it's now nearly 10 times higher than when Gordon Brown, who was then the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the UK, sold Britain's last few tons, I think it was. Yeah, a very good, prudent decision from the Scot. Platinum is barely changed at $9.95, and palladium is down $22 an ounce to $9.28 an ounce. Other commodities, gratifyingly, we on the oil price compared to the last time the three of us spoke. $82.80 for West Texas, which is down a tad, and also down a tad is Brent crude oil, which is exactly $85 per barrel. So gas prices up 4.5%. They're all over the place as usual and elsewhere. Copper down 3%. That's not good for South Africa. Mm-hmm. And not good for Anglo-American PLC, David. I'll come to that in a second. The Anglo stable came out with numbers today. S&P 500 futures down by nearly 0.5% to 5,612. That's the September futures. US 10-year doing nicely in the last few days, 4.16%. The South African 10-year after the rate decision, a bit disappointed, 9.80%. And Bitcoin is just under 64,000, which is down 2%. David, the Anglo stable, you watch it, obviously, because you watch everything. What did you think?
You know what? In a simple soundbite, the production was okay. Prices weren't, meaning that they increased production. But, I mean, when you look at the platinum basket down 25%, the coal basket, the same kind of thing, you know, coal prices down. And I think that's very important. You know, it's all very well to increase production, but you're getting less for the amount of metal or coal that you produce. The market's kind of discounting it already. It was only slightly down. But I think that's our challenge. And I think it's going to take some time before those prices turn around. I think we're close to the bottom in terms of pricing, but I don't think the bottom is going to turn. You know, I don't think the turnaround is going to come speedily until we get global growth, until we get China doing something. So it remains a weak spot in the market. And most of our miners were down today, with the exception of, you know, one or two platinum stocks that were slightly better. But overall, it's a worrying number. You know, the production was fine, but I think that where prices are at the moment just puts a lot of pressure on the big miners.
Okay. Let me just give you a few ups and downs on the JSC before we come to all matters tech with Viv Govender. Bidcorp up nearly 3%. Sogo Sun also nearly 3% higher, as is Tiger Brands. And on the downside, Pick and Pay. Is that a negative story? I don't know. But anyway, it's down 4.4%. No, it's just a natural fall of 4.4%.
They're in the midst of the rights, yeah. They're in the midst of the rights issue at the moment. They issued rights yesterday. Mm. So I'm not quite sure what's driving the price down. But most of the price fall yesterday was because of the rights. This is just, yes. I think this is going to go lower anyway.
22 Rand a share, 22.50, gosh. Telkom down 3.4%. I still maintain this is going to between 10 and 15 Rand a share. Glencore down 2.8, the aforementioned commodity companies not doing so well. Redefine down 2.6, and African Rainbow Minerals, another commodity producer, down 2.5%. Viv, I was watching telly this morning, as is my habit, and I saw a feature with an English chap in California from a company called Oxford Ionics. And they say they've come up with this revolutionary quantum chip. Now, I don't know the difference between a quantum semiconductor chip and an AI chip. Maybe you could explain. Viv?
Well, the quantum chips, the quantum computers, is something that's been like a dream. It's like nuclear fusion. It's something that people think is theoretically possible and has been tried for years and years and years. And it does, you know, occasionally show like signs of succeed, but never in a way that can be actually useful in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that is something I think it's down the line. But speaking of computer, like AI here, I just want to give you kind of some stats. So if you are thinking that this is a bubble, this is some stats that's going to reinforce that, okay? Mm-hmm. So do you know, 2019 was the first time we had a company breach $1 trillion.
Yes.
It was Apple. I mean, obviously, you talk about the PetroChinas and like the Saudi Aramco's and so on, but forget about those guys. I'm talking about like the normal companies. And 2019, first time, 5 years ago, company breached $1 trillion. That's about pretty much what NVIDIA added in the last year to its valuation. Mm-hmm. $1 trillion.
Yeah, it's really scary. Okay. I just wonder what the founder, the CEO, and major minority shareholder is going to be worth in 5 years' time. He could be the world's first trillionaire if AI continues like this, wouldn't you say, Viv?
No, but here's the thing, Grant. Okay, this is the next step. Okay, this is going to blow your minds. Okay, so I did a calculation. I'm talking about $5-6 trillion you can reasonably say is AI-linked valuation in the world right now. Okay. Now, $5 or $6 trillion, let's just say these AI companies are able to take 10% of the value that AI generates in the world. Obviously, an AI company cannot take all the value AI generates. Like, you know, computer, like Microsoft doesn't take all the value that Windows generates and Excel generates, you know what I mean? But they take a portion of it. Let's just say these companies can take 10% of the value that AI generates. And let's just say you actually amortize that 10% value over 10 years, okay? And that pretty much translates to something like $50 trillion of value AI has to create over the next 10 years. For these guys to be worth what they are right now. The total global economy is only worth about $90 trillion.
Gosh.
If you think about it. So the current valuations are real. We've got to start seeing in the next few years, like GDP growth rates that are 2, 3, 4% higher than they otherwise would have been due to AI. That's what we need to be seeing. It's not going to be something that is going to be like, oh, a small little thing here or there. The valuations are just so high at the moment that to justify their current valuations, we need to be seeing a couple percentage points at the minimum higher GDP growth rates globally over the next per year, starting in the next few years. And so that's what you're looking at.
If I was a socialist, I'm a secret socialist. If I was a socialist finance minister or something like that, I would say, I would sit down with these companies and say, you're making obscene amounts of money and congratulations, very well done. But I'm going to impose the occasional windfall profits tax on you and start to do good with it. And I don't think they'd really notice. David, you're not a socialist, but I think that the sort of numbers that Vivas has come up with has made me sort of deflated and excited at the same time.
You know what? I understand where Vivas is going. But one thing I learned, just don't interfere. Just leave it. You know, the markets will eventually decide. You know what I mean? Markets correct themselves. And sometimes it's ugly. And sometimes it can be very ugly. And that's what I love about markets. And, you know, for the meantime, we are going through a little bit of an ugly couple of days now. Markets are coming down quite dramatically. Nothing can stop it. I don't know where the driver's coming from. But you know, I've always found that we sorted the internet bubble, and I'm not saying this is a bubble in that sense, but we correct ourselves. You know, yes. People are that's what I love about it, you know. And also, we never know what's going to happen in the future. We can't really forecast what NVIDIA or Microsoft or any of these companies are going to look like 5, 10 years down the line. And, you know, that's what I find exciting about where we are. So, you know, if the money's flowing into NVIDIA or any of these things, you can follow the money. As soon as you want to get out, you just get out. You know, that's the beauty of liquid markets. So, yeah, it's, don't worry, because all you're going to do is get a headache and make yourself miserable.
I'm talking more about politics and saying to these companies, okay, just sell a couple of percent of the shares that you own and put it into the market. Don't disrupt the market. And that money is going to be used for social projects, whatever it is. Mm. I don't know. David, give us the closing JSE indices, if you would.
So the JSE, we closed. There was a big sell-off. Well, I say a big sell-off. There was a sell-off towards the close that took us into negative territory. So we closed down 0.15 at 80334. All the segments were down. Resources down just under 1%. Mainly taken down by the big miners. You know, I think on the back of falling prices. I think Billiton down, Anglo's down, and so on. Nothing really positive in the mining markets. Banks also under very little, under a bit of pressure. Nothing dramatic as well. Industrial steady. I can't find any real features in this market. It's just one of those days. Value traded just over 20 billion as well. A lot of it comes in the last few minutes. But it's kind of a featureless market. You mentioned Pick and Pay. You mentioned some of those. So I think that identifies exactly where we are in this market. But it's just a quiet time. I think we'll start to get results sooner or later, you know, the June companies and that. But I think what is a bit concerning are, you know, the sell-off that we're seeing in US markets. There's nothing stopping the kind of trend that started. You know, those shares try to turn around early as we open, you know, as the market opens. But
it's holiday time. They're getting pushed around, David. We know what happens. Small orders can have big effects. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, as always. Fascinating stuff. Okay. Politics, AI, and everything else. Very good. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, also in Johannesburg. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.